revise your goals. What are you trying to do? You know, with us, with our syndications, we like to hold our deals a little bit longer if possible, right? So if you're a passive investor and you want your money back in 24 months or 36 months, and that sponsor's holding your money for 5, 6, 7 years, you may not be compatible. So look at what your goals are. Look at what your risk tolerance is. What markets do you want to be in? Do you want to be in the Southeast? Do you want to be up in New York City? What is your goal? What are your cap rates? What are your cash on cash returns? And then say, hey, this syndicator is capable of doing that. I like his or her business model, and I want to go with them because I feel that the deal looks good. I feel the market is good. My goals align with their goals, and I like their business plan.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey everybody, welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Gino Barbero. How you doing today, Gino?
Mark, I'm doing great. How you doing?
Awesome. I'm well. Thank you so much for being here today. Gino is an investor, business owner, best-selling author, and entrepreneur. He has grown his real estate portfolio to over 1,400 multifamily units. He is the co-founder of Jake and Gino, a multifamily real estate education company that offers coaching and training in real estate. He is also the co-host of the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Gino, I'm honored to have you on the show today. Could you tell the listeners just a little bit more about your story and how you got started in real estate?
Mark, thanks for having me on. It's exciting to be on podcast and just talk about real estate in general and promote the space. And really, when you stop and think about it, real estate is such a big driver of this economy. If it wasn't for real estate during the pandemic, I don't know where we would be, right? So it's always exciting. I started as an entrepreneur in my early 20s. I got out of college, and it's sort of like a mini pandemic when I got. There were no jobs. I got out in the early 90s. The economy stunk. I went to work at AIG. It was a great company at the time, but it was one of the most boring jobs I've ever had in my entire life. It was reinsurance accounting. And Mark, you know, when you're watching paint dry on the wall, that's what reinsurance accounting is, bro. It is so boring, but it's such a necessary component. And I wasn't a cubicle guy. I just wasn't. I had always worked with my dad. So we ended up buying a restaurant together. I worked at the restaurant for over 20 years. In 2008, I saw that there was a big shift going on, a huge transfer of wealth. The internet started coming on. You saw what happened with banks and with companies going under. That was my pandemic back then. That was my switch to say, what do I need to do now? There's people out there making millions. I'm working harder, making less. I decided to get into coaching with real estate. I wanted to do multifamily because I had done a couple of deals prior, a mobile home park deal that went bad. I did a strip mall up in New York that just did not go well. It went really bad. And I focused on, I had a fourplex. I like this multifamily thing. I can do it part-time while I'm, you know, working at the restaurant. So how do I do that? I didn't know where to start. So I went out and I spent, back then, I spent a lot of money on my education. But as an entrepreneur, we all know that it's you're investing in your education. When you're spending money on education, you're looking at it as an ROI. And that ROI has been it's been infinite for me. If I didn't take in those steps and gotten mentors out there to help me walk me through deals and show me what I was doing wrong and shorten my learning curve, I probably would still be at the restaurant right now. So in 2011, Jake decides to move down to Tennessee. And I had been friends with him for a couple of years. He was a pharmaceutical rep at the restaurant, taking out catering orders, two doctor's offices. He saw the writing on the wall with him also. 6 layoffs in 4 years. The Sunshine Act was getting passed. His commissions were getting cut. He wanted to be the driver of his own ship also. So I said, Jake, when you get down there, and mind you, Mark, I'm a New Yorker. 10 years ago, I didn't know where Knoxville, Tennessee was either. So it's one of those things where I whip out the laptop. I'm looking on LoopNet and I'm like, wow, 30 a door. These deals look like they can work. He got down there. And you know, after 18 months of hearing, y'all ain't going to do business here, getting rejected, going into broker's offices. We finally found the broker who, you know, who took faith in us. We had confidence in us. We closed our first deal after 18 months of being rejected, right? And after that, our second deal came 3 months after that. And then the third deal, 7 months after that. And I guess the rest is history. But for us, we both didn't have the shiny object syndrome. We're still focused on multifamily 100%. We've created multiple businesses around multifamily, but it's always been multifamily for us for the last decade. Will we go into single family homes? Probably not. Will we go into self-storage? Probably not. Not because they're not great niches. It's just that we've fallen in love with multifamily. There's so many amazing benefits to the niche and to the space, and that vehicle has really benefited us, and we've created an education platform around that vehicle.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you have any thoughts on how you were able to kind of grow and scale that so quickly with the educational program, the 1,400 units? You know, you were able, it took a little while to get that first deal, but it sounds like you were off to the races after that. Did you have any thoughts on what sparked that growth, and especially that history of being at the restaurant for 20 years? And then it seemed like when you, as soon as you got into multifamily, it kind of grew super fast. What do you attribute that to?
So two words I want everyone to write down: personal development. It starts out with listening to Zig Ziglar, then to Jim Rohn, then to Tony Robbins, then to T. Harv Eker, then to Norman Vincent Peale, then to Mr. Napoleon Hill. And the list goes on and on and on. I read countless books. I'm not a smart dude. Jake is probably a little bit smarter than me. You put both of us together, we get one, right? But the reality is I had failed already in a business. I had started a business called Gino's Family. Not that I failed. It was just a component of the restaurant where I was doing videos with my kids. I wrote a cookbook. I was doing YouTube videos. So I had already started doing a multifaceted part of the restaurant. I just didn't want to be in the restaurant business anymore. Mm. And I'd spent a significant amount of money ramping up. I was doing physical products from China. I had a mentor teaching me that. I spent a lot of money there. So I had already the machinations of what it needed to take to do a business, right? So for me, I think everyone, I created a blog called The 7 Steps to Scaling Your Multifamily Business. For me, the step one was the epiphany. It was like the aha moment. My aha moment was at 2008. I challenge everyone on this call, if you're in multifamily or you're in a business, go back and think about what your aha moment was. Mine was, I can't keep doing this. I'm making less money and I'm working harder. And I want control. And it was always thinking about that one restaurant, that one little business, that whole idea of, you know what? That's not risky. And that to me, my aha moment, my epiphany was that is risky because I only have one stream of revenue. And if something happens to me, I'm done. If, you know, food preferences change, all of a sudden you have all these other companies out there, whether they're just shipping food, Blue Apron, Blue Hen, whatever the heck they're called, right? You have Paneras of the world. You have actually Whole Foods making pizzas. I mean, it's like the competition has been fierce. So that whole industry shifted. So if I was still in that industry, I'd be practically out of a job. So for me, the epiphany was the first step. The second one was, you know what, taking massive education. I think that's what really helped me get the confidence of what I needed. Because in the beginning, I didn't know what a cap rate was. When I did my deal back in 2005 and I did my deal with the strip mall in 2007, I didn't know what cap rates were, what cash on cash returns were. I was the mom and pop investor. Looks like a good deal. I can make some money on this deal. I didn't know how to analyze leases. So that education was really, truly important for me. The step number three, taking massive action. You know, education times action equals results. Previously, I was taking massive action. Without that education, I wasn't getting the results. Once I got that massive education and that massive action, that equaled the results. And I think step four is buying that first deal. And for me, the first deal was having the confidence to go out and start speaking about it. And for Jake and myself, we did an owner finance deal. I partnered with my brother in the first deal and I got proof of concept. And you know, I always tell our students, Jake and Gino, think big, but start small. You don't have to start with a 150-unit apartment complex. I'm thankful that I started with something small. Like I had said, Mark, I had started with a 4-unit apartment complex years back. So it was a fourplex. I understood how to do leases. I understood how to manage people, how to do the landscaping, contract services, all that on a small scale. When we bought our 25-unit, they were weekly renters. All of a sudden, we have 25 units there. They're in one space. They're contiguous. Jake can do it part-time. But at the same time, you start having vacancies. Septic fields start going. A tenant passes away in the unit. We have weekly renters and bed bugs. And the list goes on. If that was 100 units on our first deal, we may not be talking right now. So don't be overwhelmed in thinking you need to do a massive deal on your first deal. We had the confidence that the 25 units was great. We can figure this thing out. We had the credibility. We had the proof of concept and the momentum. For that second deal, I was able through the restaurant to be able to leverage and find my current partner, Mike, who was a strong balance sheet, who had a great mind, great business mind. He didn't know multifamily at all. He was buying single family homes up in New York. That didn't make sense. That's what he knew about real estate. Once he saw the concept with RUBS, adding other streams of income, driving the NOI, the financing contingencies and the financing piece on multifamily, he was all in. But I had to actually convince him. And if I didn't have that first deal, I may not have gotten him to invest with us on the second deal, because he saw how the first deal was performing and he saw the numbers. He's like, let's take a chance. So that second deal worked well. Third deal, we go from a 36 unit to 136 units, which is, you know, it was a $4 million deal at the time. Mike had a strong enough balance sheet. I had some capital set aside, and the three of us, me, Mike, and Jake, partnered up for that third deal. And I, like I said, the rest is history. So don't think you have to go out there and conquer the world. Rome wasn't built in a day. Take your time, take that massive, you know, that massive education, then start taking that action, start aligning yourself with people you want to do business with. Cause I think multifamily is a team sport. I wouldn't be here without Jake, and I wouldn't be here without Mike. And I think Jake would probably say the same thing also, cause we were both mentors to each other. We were both part of a, what we call a mastermind group, speaking to him every day and partnering every day. One plus one with me and Jake is not two. One plus one equals a lot more than that. So that's how we look at it in multifamily.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that approach. And it's cool that the first deal was kind of seller finance, and then you just scaled up from there and got bigger and bigger. And I really like the fact that you kept the team small, and it sounds like it was probably structured with a joint venture or something in the beginning. What are your thoughts on deal structure? I think a lot of people, as they're getting into the space and trying to get their first deal done, they're jumping right into syndication. Is that a good idea? Do you prefer one structure to the other? I know that you guys are doing both syndications as well, so I'm sure you have insight there as far as just kind of comparing the two different structures.
Mark, that's a great question. I've had an evolution. We teach the buy right, the manage right, and the finance right. And when I first started, I didn't want to have any partners. I just wanted to do deals ourselves. And we were very fortunate. The first 1,000 units that we purchased, we were able to refi over $10 million from those deals and buy the next one. That's how we scaled up, right? We bought right, we financed right, we financed with community banks in the front end, and then we refinanced out to agency. Now, is that right for everyone? I don't know. What I want everyone to do who's listening on the podcast right now, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? Are you just trying to get a little bit of passive income where you have control? Or are you wanting to start a business and get out of the rat race from 9 to 5? Because, you know, our students, when they come on, everyone has different goals without even thinking about it. Like, why multifamily for you? For me, in the beginning, all I wanted was, honestly, Mark, I've got 6 kids. All I wanted was a couple grand a month to pay for their college, right? We all think small, right? That's what I was thinking. I was thinking small. Who, pizza guy, how can I do multifamily, right? I needed to prove it to myself, but that's what my goal was. So for me, buying a deal by myself with owner financing worked perfectly for me. Now, if you're starting up, you have no capital, but you have time and you want to create a business, maybe syndication is the right tool or the right vehicle for you. I just want everyone to think right now. When you're buying right, there's so many different ways to buy, right? You can buy yourself, you can buy with a partner, you can syndicate, you can owner finance. There are so many different tools to utilize with buying right. Figure out what the goal is, what you're trying to achieve. And you also have to couple that with what we call the three pillars of real estate, which is the market cycle, number one, everybody, the debt, number two, and the exit strategy, number three. So when you're buying right, look through those lens, the market cycle, the debt, and the exit strategy. In some parts of the US, we're looking at the market cycle. Some market cycles, you may be in hyper supply where you're looking to syndicate a deal and the returns aren't there. What's your cost of capital? If your cost of capital, let's say 3% for the debt, and you need to give another 6 or 7 or 8% for prefs to your investors, well, you're at 10%. Can you find a deal that has 10% cash on cash return? Probably not right now. It's a little difficult in some of these markets. So maybe syndication is off the table now. Mark, when we started out back in 2013, to take a walk down memory lane, everyone thinks, oh, I wish I was back there. There were so many deals. Well, guess what? There was no capital back then. GDP was 1%. Rents for a one bedroom were $350 a month. Now they're 600 plus rubs. So they've almost doubled in the last 7 years. So when you go back there, syndication was not, the Jobs Act had just come out. That part of the cycle, syndication wasn't hot. Now, as we started getting longer into the cycle, syndication became more into favor. Right now, it may be more difficult to syndicate. So what I want everyone to think about is, what are your goals? What are you trying to achieve? Syndication is great if you want to generate some fees and you want to generate some type of asset management fees, acquisition fees. You want to get some part of a deal with not putting any money into the deal as far as the general partnership. There's going to be less equity in the deal. You're going to have to sign in the debt. But then think of it this way. It's like buying a deal, putting it on a conveyor belt, letting that conveyor belt work. Like I said, that first deal, then the second deal, then 18 months, 24 months, and 36 months, after you may have a liquidity event, whether you're just going to flip the deal out or refi it. And by that time, you've got other deals coming up behind you. So syndication lends itself more to a fix and flip kind of model where you're trying to buy a deal. And if you're looking to be a long-term hold, that's why I said your goals, we love to hold these things long-term because we love the cost segregation. And we honestly love the cash flow we generate. So, you know, weigh those pros and cons, find out what your strategy is. I love syndication for, you can really scale a business. You can really, you know, get 150, 200 units with other partners and get those economies of scale from day one. But at the same time, if you're looking for a little bit more equity and a little bit more cash flow, but then Mark, again, once again, let me mention this also. Let's say you have a couple hundred grand and you want to invest into your own syndication. Well, you're investing on the LP side of the syndication. You're making preferred rates of return on your LP money. And then you're getting some GP money and you're getting some ACC fees and asset management fees. So all of this stuff has to get weighed out. But looking at the deal itself and looking at your goals, I think are the two most important things you need to look at.
Yeah, that's really smart. And that's a really good distinction too, of you know, what your strategy is as far as the hold period. And I think, you know, a lot of syndication, sometimes they need to sell in year five or six in order to hit those investor returns. And you can't do what you just said you did with your partners, which is refi that money out, roll it into the next deal. So that's really cool.
And Mark, I'm going to give you an example. We just sold a deal last week. It was a syndicated deal. We underestimated the market itself, COVID. We just didn't like, we didn't like the part of the city we were in, right? And we actually probably, once it's all said and done, we probably hit 12, 13 IRR on this thing. But the reason why we sold this was it was a syndicated deal. It was not our money. We had investors' money. So we are a fiduciary to our investors' money when you are a syndicator.
Yeah.
It's funny because I'm more willing to be a little loosey-goosey with my own money. Like, sure. I'll take more of a risk with my own capital, which is pretty stupid if you think about it. But if I've got Mark's capital on the line, I won't be able to sleep at night. Now, obviously, we had our own capital into this deal that we just sold. But at that point, it's just a different mindset. We have to do what's best for the investors. For us, possibly holding this deal for another 3, 4, 5 years and trying to turn it around and really get it up might have been okay if we held it ourselves without investors. But we're thinking first and foremost of our investors. And our business plan changes, because if you're doing a syndicated deal, you're saying, you know what, sometimes I can't spend that extra capital because I've got to return it. And I'm always only worrying about investor returns. Whereas Jake and I could say, you know what, we're going to hold this thing for the next 6 years. If we spend a little bit more on the flooring or we put in granite countertops, that's okay long term. But when you're syndicating a deal, you have to put your investors' thought all the time. And there's the asset management company and the property management company. They're always battling with the syndication. Whereas if you have your own deal, you're the asset manager. And if you're managing your own property, you're the property manager. So those conversations are a lot easier to have. But when you're syndicating, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. Has your personal strategy changed at all over the years? I know that that first property that you said, you know, it sounded a little bit rough maybe. And as far as the smaller deal sizes, have you sold those off or do you continue to hold pretty much everything long term?
That first deal is, we refied out, we had $72,000 down on that deal. 2 years after we bought it, we refied out $165,000. We still hold that property today, 25 units. It nets us $6,000 a month, every single month for the last 18 months. So it's $2,000 for each of us. That's paying my kids' college, that one deal, if I look at it. I don't want to kill the golden goose. Now, you had asked another great question. Would I buy that deal today? I would not buy that deal today only because of the part of the market cycle we're in. It's an older asset. There's more CapEx requirements to it. If I'd have to buy that property at the price I bought it every single day of the week, but where the cap rates are now for that type of asset, we have to be concerned where C properties are trading right now in a lot of markets. You can buy a C property for, you know, 5, 5.5. Well, you can buy a B property that's much newer for 4, 4.5. You're paying so much more for these C properties, these older properties. Anything built before 1970, everyone listening, you got to be careful. Plumbing is old, cast iron's old, roofs are old, driveways are old, stuff that doesn't generate income, but it needs to be up and running and fixed. And also, you're talking about, you know, the wear and tear and the CapEx tsunami that we're talking about with these older properties. So for us, for right now, we're looking for properties that are a little bit newer, built in the late 80s, early 90s. We're looking for stuff, you know, in the B space right now, but that's where we're on cycle. Now, that being said, if we can buy a property that's a C property built in the 70s, we bought one, you know, 18 months ago, but we bought it at such a great price point that it's okay. we're limiting our downside risk. And as far as size of deals, Mark, what I'm noticing right now, these bigger assets, they're being so bought up, right, built up by now by these private equity. There's so much money out there. So anything 100 units plus right now, it doesn't make sense for the way we're underwriting. Now, you know, if you're underwriting against these private equity guys and they want cost seg and they're only looking for a 4 or 5% rate of return, that's great for them, but not for the Mark Kennys and Gino Barbaros of the world. That doesn't make sense for us. So we're finding value in these smaller deals. We closed on two small deals this year, a 52 unit and a 48 unit. Now we're looking at a 33 unit. So, but those are deals we bought internally. We're not syndicating those deals. So those deals are equity deals. Our strategy with those, we have the market cycle. They're newer assets. We're actually going to have great debt on them. We've got community financing. We're going to refi. Our exit strategy is in 18 months. We're going to refi them out, pull all our capital out, and then someone's to stabilize and go on to the next one. We own them free and clear. We have the property management company that's managing those assets. So for us, it seems like now till the next 6 to 12 months, those smaller assets work well. And I think once everything shakes out with this eviction moratorium, I think owner financing is going to come into place, because I think financing is going to seize up. You're going to see LTVs dropping into the, you know, into the mid 60s, where, you know, like you said, with syndication, cash on cash returns, the returns aren't there. So hopefully we'll get some mom and pop, you know, investors out there who are selling these assets because they're motivated.
Yeah.
And bam, we can take advantage of them.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Especially kind of the C-class property type, you know, under 100 units. I think those mom and pop owners are just, you know, pulling their hair out right now with not being able to evict bad tenants and things like that.
Yep.
So that makes sense. So I wanted to touch a little bit about your educational program. And I know that you do coaching and things like that. Could you kind of give a quick overview on that? And then also for someone who wants to get into this world and hasn't done a deal yet, what's the kind of first step for someone to take to, you know, educate themselves?
Jake and I started the Jake and Gino several years back. So there's no such thing as an overnight success. I mean, this has been going on. We wrote our book in October of 2015. So it's already 5 years since we wrote our book. That's when we launched our podcast. The podcast has almost 2.5 million downloads right now. So it's been a grueling progress, slow progress. Just commit and figure it out. And it's been incremental, right? We first started out that third revenue stream of the multifamily business. We didn't think of it as a revenue stream. I just wanted to get on and talk to cool people like Ken McElroy and, you know, T. Harv Eker and all these people. I've got an interview next week with Tom Ziegler, with Zig Ziegler's son. I mean, dude, I mean, I used to drive in the car when I was in my 30s listening to his dad. So being able to connect with him and have those conversations, that was my mastermind, basically. We met a lot of vendors on there when we wrote the books, The Honeybee and Will Our Profits, and had our events. It gave us a ton of credibility. And then all of a sudden, we started to learn how to monetize the business, because, you know, coaching has been so paramount to Jake and myself for our success. We're like, you know what? We're selling these little micro courses and these stuff. That's not where people are getting the excitement and the vibes. We created the Jake and Gino mentorship program to have on-site intensive boot camps with our students. So, you know, every year we have six and seven events, whether they're money mixers, those are like bus tours with our coaches. Then we have a buy right boot camp, a manage right boot camp, a finance right boot camp. Those are 2-day on-sites with our coaches and with Jake and myself. We're teaching our students. And obviously we have the training platforms, the weekly classes, accountability pods. You know, it's all about creating that community of like-minded people. Like Jim Rome said, take a look at the 5 people around you. And that's why I only had one restaurant, because all of my peers, when I was in the restaurant business, all had one restaurant. They were nice and comfortable. But then when I got into multifamily and I start podcasting Ken McElroy and I start podcasting all these guys in the business and the syndication, I'm like, you know, I can do that. And you start raising your level. And that's one of the reasons why I created Jake and Gino, because I wanted to have like-minded people. And the amazing part about it is, as you start learning the space and you start doing it and you start teaching it, there's so much you learn from your students. Because when we go on these bus tours, we're operators. We're like, oh, you do that. How'd you save money on that? And it's amazing what you learn, and you're able to teach others that, and it's just unbelievable. And being able to partner with students on deals, that's been awesome. And being able to learn some, you know, financing tricks from other students, that's been awesome. And we're publishing a book with one of our coaches, and that's been amazing. So all of these different things that come from an educational platform, thinking that all you're going to do is sell education, that's the ancillary benefit. The real benefit is being able to network and partner with others and create value in other people's lives. That's, you know, that's awesome. And I guess the cherry on the top is having students close over 10,000 units and having about 35 students quit their W-2 jobs. That's the end result of all that hard work. That's what we're striving to achieve. But at the same time, I'm a little selfish because I'm learning a lot as we continue to grow ourselves. So
yeah, no, that's awesome.
And Mark, I'm sorry, I didn't answer your question on how do people get started. If you're in multifamily, first thing you need to do, just go check and listen to podcasts. Go on all the websites, go on Bigger Pockets, go on Jake and Gino, go on Michael Blank, go on all of these different websites. Start getting information, start seeing who you resonate with, and then just start reading. That's the first thing you need to do. And then the next thing I think you need to do is have that epiphany. Do you want multifamily? It's not going to be easy, but I guarantee you, if you can stick it with it for the next 3 to 5 years, like any other entrepreneurial venture, you will become successful. You just need to have a big enough why. Personal development's huge. Then let's get to the nitty gritty. Select the market. One market you need to select. Don't select 4 or 5. Select that one market, hopefully an emerging market, hopefully in the Southeast, Midwest, where people are moving, where jobs are moving, and then start building those relationships and stay there. No shiny object. Don't pick Atlanta, Georgia one month, and then you say, I have no deals there. I'm going to Macon. And then you know what? I'm going to go to Asheville. Pick one market, focus on, and ultimately start joining those groups. Start joining groups. Once you have a little bit of education, a little bit of experience, and you know this is what you want, it's really important that you start networking and start going to these events. Right now, they're virtual, but start going to these live events. That was my biggest regret when I first got into it. I was working at the restaurant. I couldn't take any weekends off, or so I thought I couldn't. Biggest mistake that held me back for years. Go out and start networking and start going to these live events.
It's that time in the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So Gino, with that said, what's the best real estate deal that you've done?
I mean, the best one for me, not numbers-wise, but still, it got me in the game, was the first deal that Jake and I did. We call it the little crack den, the 25-unit apartment complex, and appropriately so. I mean, Jake never knew what pills were, and all of a sudden, you know, we're walking on the property, we're seeing what's going on, and it was a rough property, but it was owner finance, like we said, 10%. It was that first deal. It was that proof of concept. It was being able to execute on refi and roll and execute on turning the units, and like I said, having a really profitable property with only 25 units. And then that led to our second deal and our third deal. I think the best deal by numbers was we did a deal back in August of 2015. It was an owner finance deal, $11 million. The owner financed the 20% of the down payment and the bank financed the 80% of the down payment. So we came in with no money out of pocket, and we actually walked away with about $100,000 in closing. The title company's like saying, like, I've never seen this before. And I'm like, I never have either, but never say never, right? And the great thing about that property was I finally got to understand what real estate was all about. Everyone needs to write this down because it's important. It's called the SPY technique, S-P-Y. Seller, property, and you. If you can solve a problem for somebody, you're going to make money in any business. This seller was motivated. 281 units in a secondary, tertiary market, not many buyers, right? We were qualified. We had the relationship with the bank, and the bank was taking a chance on us. But if we didn't pay the second note, the seller would take the property back. He was motivated enough that we knew how to solve this problem. And also, when he was going to get the couple million dollars, you know, what was he going to do with the money? He was going to put it in the bank. Well, if we can give you 5% instead of 1%, wouldn't you want that? Obviously. So the seller, if you can figure out what the seller is selling it for and why he's selling it for and what problems you're solving, really important. The property is the P, is the property, right? Is that property fit you? For us, it was freaking awesome. It was in our wheelhouse. It was doubling our portfolio. We love the value add components to it. These guys built it themselves, so we love the property. And ultimately, why? You're the last person. Everyone does it the other way around. They think of you. What do I want? Not what does that seller want? If you can think about the seller and the motivation and why he's selling and how you can solve his problems and where that money's going to, if you can figure that out and help him out, ultimately you will be rewarded at the end. So, I mean, that deal, we've refinanced it a couple of times. We still own it. They're both on agency debt. They're performing extremely well and they're in great markets. So, you know, you can always look at numbers, a deal from a numbers, but ultimately, Mark, it's that first deal that got me into the game.
Yeah, that's awesome advice. Gina, what would you say is the worst deal that you've done?
The worst deal is my first deal in my mobile home park. And it wasn't because of the deal, everybody. It was because the partnership that I created. And it wasn't because I didn't know the guy. One of my best friends said, hey, I'm doing business with this guy. He's doing mobile home parks. Partner up. I said, sure. Now, that wasn't even the problem. The problem was I was uneducated. This guy had created a syndication out of this deal, but I got no syndication docs. I didn't even know what a syndication was. He raised capital from me with the expectation of me doing nothing. I wasn't doing anything for it. So it's basically creating a security. Didn't know that, right? Obviously. And secondly, I didn't do my due diligence. Did I fly down to the property? No. Did I really understand what rates of return were? No. Did I look at his track record? No. I did no due diligence on this property. I was just able to write a check off to him and just basically say, you know what? You take the deal over. And I always say a man with the money meets a man with experience. The man with that experience gets the money and the man with the money gets the experience. And that's what happened to me. I gave him my money. I had a little extra liquid money, like I said, a little loosey goosey, but I didn't do my due diligence on that deal. And that's the biggest mistake. That's the biggest regret we always have as investors, not doing our due diligence and obviously not vetting that partner, not vetting that partner properly. He is the antithesis of Jake. Jake is a hard worker, morals, ethics, will do anything for you. He's really negotiable. He's a really smart guy. This guy was the total opposite. So, but ultimately, Mark, it's my fault. I have to be responsible for that. I can blame him all I want, but I'm the one who wrote the check. I'm the one who didn't do the due diligence, and I'm the one that made all those mistakes. And once I figured that out back in 2007, 2008, that's when I said, you know what? I need to start partnering up. I need to start learning this space. And that's what actually motivated me into getting the education, because I'm like, I'm not writing another $172,000 check to make a mistake. Let me focus on what I need to learn. And that's what really drove me. So ultimately, I can't be upset at that situation. It actually led me to success today. But man, we're going through it, a lot of pain.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Was there, what was the number one thing that you took away from that deal that's kind of stuck with you as you move forward and analyze future deals?
Well, you know, if you're going to partner with somebody, especially in the syndication space, Mark, you know, the sponsors are the most important thing. I'd rather have a marginal deal with a fantastic sponsor than a fantastic deal with a marginal sponsor, right? Because for us on the deal we just sold, I consider us really good sponsors. The deal was marginal. We did everything we could. We went with transparency. We didn't lose our investors' money. We got that money back. I went with a terrible sponsor in the deal. I mean, the deal itself was a great deal, but the sponsor was terrible. He couldn't run the deal. So he actually ended up crapping out. If he was a good sponsor, a good or great sponsor can work on the deal, can work on the ramifications, can actually at least get you out, can save you some of your capital. How do you lose 100% of someone's capital in a space? It happens because he's not a great sponsor. So I think looking at the sponsor and vetting them, making sure they have credibility, making sure they've gone through it, and making sure that they're transparent is really paramount in a deal.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Gino, we're almost out of time here, but I'd love to end with just one final question. What advice do you have for passive investors today? I know that you guys are doing syndications as well. And with the market, COVID, evictions, everything going on right now, do you have any advice for a passive investor in today's market?
Be patient and underwrite a ton of deals. We have an 8-step due diligence doc for passive investors. Like I said, the first thing you need to do is focus on the sponsor that you're going to go with. You really need to know that sponsor group. You need to see their track record. You need to see what markets they're in. We're vertically integrated. I think that's important. I like to have a company that's doing a deal that's vertically integrated because we do the property management. We spend a lot of time and it is our thing, and our costs are a lot lower, but you're actually controlling the asset. I think the second thing as a passive investor, revise your goals. What are you trying to do? You know, with us, with our syndications, we like to hold our deals a little bit longer if possible, right? So if you're a passive investor and you want your money back in 24 months or 36 months, and that sponsor's holding your money for 5, 6, 7 years, you may not be compatible. So look at what your goals are. Look at what your risk tolerance is. What markets do you want to be in? Do you want to be in the Southeast? Do you want to be up in New York City? That has nothing to do with what I'm trying to do. What is your goal? What are your cap rates? What are your cash on cash returns? And as the passive investor, continue to look at what the property management company that the sponsor's using, make sure that their team is well built out, who their syndication attorney is, who their CPAs are, who their property managers are. That's really important as a passive investor. I think, Mark, when you're investing as a passive investor, pretend you're doing it yourself full time. Pretend you're running the whole operation. Underwrite that deal as if you're buying it yourself and then translate it. And then, like I said, market selection, all these things you're doing as an active investor, just do it passively. This is not where you got a mutual fund and you're giving Vanguard $100. No, you have to actually dive into that fund and look under all layers of it and make sure that is if you're running it yourself and then say, hey, this syndicator is capable of doing that. I like his or her business model and I want to go with them because I feel that the deal looks good. I feel the market is good. My goals align with their goals and I like their business plan.
Awesome. Yeah, that's incredible advice. Thank you for that. And so where can others go to connect with you and learn more about what you're up to?
just go to jakeandgino.com. We've got, you know, 4 podcasts weekly. We have a multifamily zone I do with my wife. I love it because it's all about communication, spousal communication, communication with partners. And the irony is running a business is just like running a family. I mean, it's just the same thing. Core values, vision statements, you know, all that kind of stuff. It blends together. We have the Wheelbarrow Profits show, the RAND CRE show, and then we have a show called Movers and Shakers, which our students are highlighted that are closing deals. And just go to jakeandgino.com. And like I said, Mark, if anybody wants to reach out to me, gino@jakeandgino.com. I'll send them out a PDF copy of our Honeybee book.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate it. Well, Gino, thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been awesome having you on the show, and enjoy the rest of your day, man.
Mark, thanks. Take care, everybody.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. If you're interested in apartment building investments, schedule a call with me so we can have a chance to chat. My company is focused on growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. So let's hop on a quick call and talk about your investment goals and see if we're a good fit. Find out more at stellarinvestmentgroup.com.